You're listening to The Martial Brain, the podcast that explores the intersection between the martial arts, science, critical thinking, skepticism, and that wacky organ that floats inside our skull in a pool of cerebrospinal fluid, making life unpredictably inspiring, infuriating, and sometimes just batshit crazy. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. We've got the enemy right where we want them. They're all around us. Part 1. The Principle of Interior Lines and the Martial Arts. Today I want to begin, in a three-part podcast, to compare a concept from military doctrine to the individual combat of the martial arts. This concept is called interior lines. Interior lines occur when enemy forces have you partially or completely surrounded. While that's certainly not a desirable state to find yourself in, it does present a few situational advantages to an intelligent commander. First, there's communication. It's much easier for the commander of the interior force to stay in touch with all of his troops than it is for the commander of the forces outside the perimeter. This was especially true in the days before instantaneous electronic communication. Second, there's movement. Let's say you are a member of a military force that is encircled. You're currently stationed at the eastern, or 3 o'clock, part of the circle. You receive orders to travel to the western, or 9 o'clock, part of the circle to reinforce the lines there. You have the luxury of traveling straight across the circle and arriving at the 9 o'clock portion before the enemy forces, who have to go the long way around the circumference, can get there. Third is supplies. You can have a supply point at the center of the circle from which you can most efficiently distribute ammunition, medical supplies, food, and water to your troops. All of this means that you can do more, sometimes much more, with fewer troops and fewer supplies than the enemy can do with more troops and more supplies. Having access to interior lines is what is referred to in military circles as a force multiplier. Many examples of this concept exist in military history. Today I'm going to describe two of them, and then I'll go into depth on the third one in the next episode. First is the case of the German-speaking Kingdom of Prussia, led by its brilliant general king, Frederick the Great, Friedrich der Große, during the Seven Years' War, from 1756 to 1763. This titanic conflict, which we in North America call the French and Indian War, pitted Great Britain, Prussia, Portugal, Ireland, a number of small German principalities, and the Iroquois Confederation against, well, just about everyone else in the world. It was the first truly global world war, with theaters of combat on the European continent, in North America, the Caribbean, Africa, India, and in the Philippines. Now, Prussia was a landlocked country and surrounded in this war by its enemies. Sweden to the north, Russia to the east, the Austro-Hungarian Empire to the south, and France to the west. Without his brilliant use of the principle of interior lines, along with the finest army on the planet, Frederick the Great would have been quickly overwhelmed. For all 7 years of the war, he and his generals raced back and forth across Central Europe, winning some battles and losing others, but winning enough of them to stay in the fight. Despite being vastly outnumbered and constantly surrounded, Frederick pursued this knuckle-biting process until the armies on both sides were worn down to mere shadows of their former selves. Prussia, bloodied but unbowed, remained unconquered until peace was negotiated. That's an example of the military use of the principle of interior lines on a grand scale. Here's an example on a scale that encompasses only one battle, albeit a very large battle. The Battle of Alesia. This is one of the strangest battles in military history. Let me explain. In 58 BC, Julius Caesar began his 6-year conquest of Gaul, which is modern-day France and Belgium. Gaul was inhabited by Celtic tribes called, appropriately enough, Gauls. After several years of dividing and conquering a number of the tribes, Caesar found himself facing a coalition of unconquered tribes. A charismatic war leader named Vercingetorix had accomplished this union. Now, Vercingetorix knew that his troops were no match one-on-one for the Roman army. He avoided pitched battle and instead engaged in a scorched earth policy, ravaging the countryside and destroying whatever food he could find that the Romans might get their hands on. After some intense chasing, fighting, and marching, Caesar finally hunted Vercingetorix down and trapped him along with 80,000 Gallic warriors in a town called Alesia. The town was well suited for defense, being sited atop a steep hill with rivers on both sides. Caesar decided to starve the Gauls out rather than attacking. He had about 70,000 Roman troops at his disposal, and he used them well, spending 3 weeks to build 11 miles of wooden palisades in a circle around the town, and also digging deep ditches riddled with man-traps between the palisades and the city. Vercingetorix sent out cavalry in an attempt to disrupt the construction of the palisades, but Roman troops fought off the cavalry. However, some of the horsemen got away into the countryside. Caesar knew that the escaped cavalry would go for help. Help arrived a few weeks later in the form of more than 100,000 Gallic warriors. But not before Caesar had constructed a second circle of fortifications, 14 miles of palisade, outside the first circle, facing outward in preparation for resisting the Gallic relief force. This is what makes the Battle of Alesia so strange in military history. You have a military force surrounding another force that is in turn surrounding a city which contains yet another military force. Caesar made brilliant use of the principle of interior lines against combined attacks from both the internal and the external Gallic armies, moving his troops rapidly along the palisades to meet the various attacks attempted at a number of points along the lines of fortification. Eventually, the Gauls of the external force gave up and left. They were starving, tired, and not seeing much success against the disciplined Roman troops. Vercingetorix, whose trapped army was starving to death, was forced to surrender. This amazing battle was the masterpiece of Caesar's stellar military career. It was also the basis for a very cool tabletop board game called Alesia, produced by Avalon Hill War Games in the 1970s, in which my nerdy little ass played hundreds of times. I think it's still packed away somewhere in a closet. Well, that concludes my first two examples of the use of interior lines in military history. Next episode, I'll go into greater depth describing one of the greatest examples of this concept, the Battle of Rorke's Drift. Anyway, that's what I think. But I could be wrong. Let me know what you think, and check out old episodes of the Martial Brain podcast at my website, rpmartialarts.com. I'm Jeff Westfall for the Martial Brain. The Martial Brain is produced by Raging Squirrel Productions in association with the Rising Phoenix Martial Arts Academy. If you like the podcast and would like to help it grow, go to iTunes or Stitcher and give it an honest rating and review. Contact me with questions about the Martial Brain or the Rising Phoenix Academy at our website, rpmartialarts.com.